You're listening to Something Beautiful, part of the Emergent Podcast Network. For more information about this and other great shows, visit us online at www.emergentpodcast.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, on the phone with me today via the world of Skype, I'm talking to my good friend Carrie McCam, who is down in Waco, Texas. You may remember Carrie. We talked to her husband, Dave McCam, I believe the second or third episode of our show. So if you want to get a little bit of detail on her hubs and find out more about things from his perspective, I encourage you to go back in the archives and check that out. But Carrie, we're glad to have you on the show today.
Thanks. I'm glad to be here.
So tell me a little bit, just briefly, about who you are.
Who I am. I'm trying to figure that out myself. I'm married to the most awesome man that I could ever be friends with, be lovers with. He pretty much sounds really cheesy, but he completes me. I'm a mother, which is hard. That's a new role for me. I mean, I have an 8-year-old kid, but I learn things every day that I'm not really used to. So, I'm a servant. That's what I am. And, you know, I love to do the dirty work and things that people are afraid to get out there and do as far as serving the Lord. I like to get in there and I kind of like to be not the rebel, but I like to get out there and do what I think that Jesus would be doing if he was here. So
you admit it. You're a rebel.
Yeah, I am pretty much a rebel.
Now, tell me a little bit about your upbringing. What was your childhood like? Were you involved in church? Was it something foreign to you at that point?
It was foreign to me. I grew up, my mom was a single mom and she was raising 5 of us. I'm the youngest and the only girl of 5 kids. And actually my brothers are much older than I am. My oldest brother would have been 18 years older than I am. And then the youngest out of the boys, he is 12 years older than I am. So there's a big gap between me and the boys. And so I grew up in a fatherless home. My mom and dad got divorced when I was 3. And so I never knew my dad. If he was standing here, I wouldn't even know who he is. And so never met him, never had a relationship with him. So my brothers and my mother pretty much raised me, which was pretty difficult. My mom, like I said, was single and working every job she could to provide food on the table. And my brothers sold anything they could to provide food on the table. And they were alcoholics and drug abusers. And that's what I grew up with. I started abusing alcohol and drugs at a very young age. And, you know, along with that, my mom was single and had plenty of men in and out through the home. And unfortunately, I was taken advantage of in those situations. And so that made for a pretty crappy childhood.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it was tough.
So I don't imagine you had any contact with the church or with God or faith or any of that nature.
No, I didn't. My mom, I think she tried. She was a non-practicing Catholic, and she would mention things about Jesus or about Mary, you know, but that was stuff that I never knew about. And really, at a young age, I just never had any questions about that kind of stuff, you know. It wasn't until I was about 12 and going to school, I became really good friends with this girl. And when I went over to her house, that was the first glimpse of a family unit that I'd ever seen. I didn't know that you had a dad, that was like a regular thing. And I didn't know that they prayed before meals and that they sat down and read the Bible together, which I had no idea what that was. And so it was really foreign to me, that whole family unit. And then, you know, but the stipulation for me to go over there and stay the night was, hey, if you're going to come and stay the night here, you have to go to church with us on Sunday.
Oh, they suckered you in.
I was like, wow, okay, all right. I mean, but it you know, to me, it wasn't a big deal. I was like, all right, well, I get to get away from home for a couple of days. No big deal. So I went in to church with them and to Assemblies of God Pentecostal Church. And I remember just being freaked out because, you know, people were slain in the spirit and speaking in tongues and dancing around. And I was like, what is going on? Mm-hmm. But, you know, I remember feeling really peaceful and just full of questions, full of questions. And that was my first experience with church. And, you know, throughout my teenage years, I would go back and I was, you know, very heavily into drugs. But I'd be high as a kite, but I'd be going into the youth group, you know, and I formed this really great relationship with my youth pastor, who we still have a great relationship. And so he kind of got me. He knew I was higher than a kite. He knew that I was wasted out of my mind, but he accepted me, which I thought was strange, but he did. So that was my first experience with church and God.
Now, is this the same guy that I know Dave talked about, someone in your past that had a big influence on him and got him involved in ministry and really taught him what real church is? Is this the same individual?
This is the same individual, yeah. Yeah, his name is, can I say his name?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, his name is Daryl White. And he was the youth pastor at the church that I grew up in for years. Like, I went to, you know, started going to the youth group, I guess, at 13, 14 or whatever. And he continued to be the youth pastor until Dave and I were well married, moved to Houston, came back to Texas, started looking for a place to go to church and decided we would go back to the church that I grew up in, you know.
Yeah.
So that he was still there. And he was very much ready to not be the youth pastor anymore because he felt that his time, his season was over.
Right.
And so he kind of groomed Dave into that position. We had already been sort of in the ministry back in Houston, and coming back to Red Oak was, it was totally God, because my mom was really sick and I got to spend that last year of her life with her. Mm-hmm. But he was the one who pretty much helped us, guided us, if you will, along that path and molded us to be different than what was, you know, what's the.
Right. Well, now what was there some big event then that actually pushed you towards Christ or, brought your faith to reality? Or was it just that continual kind of nudging of the youth pastor and the nudging of the Holy Spirit that brought about that change?
I would like to say it was the nudging of the youth pastor, but it wasn't. I mean, he did everything he could do, but I was so rebellious. I was so set in my ways as a teenager, thinking I knew it all. And, you know, I wasn't ready to change. I wasn't ready for God to have my life. I was ready to party. And, you know, unfortunately, I drugged Dave with me down that path, because before he was perfect. You know, he was just this perfect, innocent little guy. And, you know, we grew up across the street from each other. We were best friends, and I never would date him because, you know, he was my best friend.
Right.
And, you know, I just wouldn't go there. But when we finally did start dating, he was not a believer at all. Mm-hmm. And I was halfway a believer. I was sitting on the fence. I mean, I knew about God. I had experienced the presence of God, but I liked my drugs a little bit too much than I did God. So, but when he told me he wasn't a believer, I was like, what? I was like, no, dude, I'm sorry. This cannot happen. But, you know, I was like, you got to come to church with me. And I think I was really sending confusing messages, obviously, because I was always high, but yet I wanted to go to church. So I don't know that I helped him out too much in that area. So anyway, you know, it wasn't the nudging of my youth pastor. Dave and I had actually gone through just crap and crap and crap when we first got married. We've been married almost 13 years now. Mm-hmm. And I think the first 2 years of our marriage was probably the worst ever. There was just a lot of alcohol and drug abuse and violence involved. I mean, he would never, ever hit me. He would defend himself because I would always beat the crap out of him or try to. Mm-hmm. That's what I grew up with in my home. I mean, there was always physical violence between my brothers and whoever was there. So I thought the way to solve conflict was to use your hands, you know. And so poor Dave, you know, he always put up with my crap and always, you know, hung in there. I think it was after we were married for 2 years, I started working at this oil company. And I remember looking over at the next cubicle and there was this lady sitting there and she just looked happy, like genuinely happy. And I was pissed off because I was like, what is wrong with this woman? She's not ever had a bad day in her freaking life. And she's don't smile. You know? So, I mean, I would look up and be like, what is wrong with her? Why can't she just be unhappy? But I was drawn to her. Mm-hmm. I was literally drawn to this woman. Like, I've got to know who she is. I've got to know what's going on. I've got to know why she's so happy. Mm-hmm. And so she befriended me, you know, she was really nice and she never spoke about Christ. She never spoke about church. She just was, she loved me where I was. Mm-hmm. And we built a relationship and we, with her and her husband's help, I believe that that is what sparked the fire in my heart. And I began to have a real relationship with Christ. They became our mentors, so to speak, Dave and I. And I remember the first time she had said something about her church, I immediately jumped on it and I was like, where's it at? What time does it start? Where do we need to be? And at that point, I knew that I had a fight on my hands because to go back home and tell Dave, hey, let's go check out this church, that was enough to start a fight.
Right.
But when I went home and told him, you know, I said, hey, Karen said they met at a junior high, you know, in a choir room. And there was only like 15 to 20 people there. And there was the kicker. She said you could come in your pajamas or your shorts. And I was like, oh, that's fantastic. When I told Dave that, he was like, oh, okay, well, all right, we'll do that. That was not the response I was expecting. Mm-hmm. So we got there, and unfortunately, I got the wrong time. So we were there an hour early, which caused a huge fight in the truck. We're sitting there waiting for the people to get there. And he was just fuming, angry that I got him there so early. So I asked him, you know, hey, you know, I want to know exactly why you don't believe in God. Because, you know, we've been together for 5 years and I never asked you because I never wanted it to bring it up. And he said the most probably groundbreaking statement ever. He said, you know, I believe that if there is a God, I believe that church today is not what God intended it to be. Mm-hmm. And I was like, it kind of was like a slap in the face because it was something that I never really knew or I knew, but I didn't recognize.
Right.
And so I sat back and I was like, you know, I think you're right. He was like, yeah. He says, I don't think that church is supposed to be a gossip house or a place for people to come and fashion show and, you know, beg for money to build their buildings and their temples. And I was like, wow, this guy's really thought about this. He's really thought this through. Mm-hmm. And so we walk in and these people just start hugging us and loving us. And we're like, what the crap is going on? I mean, really, we were kind of freaked out because I was like, oh my gosh, Dave is going to kill me. We're going to get home and he's going to be like, what's going on? I don't want to go back there again. So finally, we sit down and the guy who's speaking that day, he says, hey, you know, the Lord's really put something on my heart today to talk about. And I think today we're going to talk about church today is not what God intended it to be. And I looked over at Dave and Dave looked over at me and our eyes were just huge. Like, oh my word, were they listening to us or whatever? And we just knew that couldn't be the truth, you know? Right. So we looked at each other and he put his head down like, I thought he was going to cry. And he looked over at me. He goes, I think this is where we're supposed to be. Hmm. And finally, I felt peace in my heart. You know, this whole time that we've been going through such a rotten time with our marriage and, you know, divorce was always an option. I just sat there and thought, oh, my God, there's hope. There is hope. And so we attended and we were, you know, Dave was baptized in a pool, which I thought was amazing. And this couple, David and Karen Turner, who live with us now in Waco, they mentored us for years. We lived out in Houston for 5 years, and they mentored us. And anytime we had a problem, we knew we could go to them and they could help us see a different point of view. Mm-hmm. And so they actually were responsible for throwing us into youth ministry right away. So that was really cool.
Very good. Well, now I know that Dave kind of goes into the trip to Houston and then to Colorado and back to Texas and so forth. Kind of where we left off with him, y'all are just getting ready to move to Waco. You're talking about starting a youth program here in Waxahachie as well. But things haven't quite gone that way.
Right.
So maybe you can pick up. You moved to Waco, I guess it was in 2008. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And he takes a job at the Methodist home, Methodist Children's Home.
Yeah, he did.
And what are you doing at that point when you first get to Waco?
When we first get to Waco, I was previously, before we left, I was working at a prison ministry called Bill Blass Champions for Life. And I worked in the office there and absolutely loved my job, going into the prisons and talking to these people about Christ. That was amazing to me. I mean, that was really, truly amazing. And so to leave my job was heartbreaking for me to leave. Mm-hmm. But again, the Turners were living here in Waco, and they had hooked Dave up with a contact at the Methodist home for a better job. And, gladly enough, Dave took the job. Mm-hmm. So we move here, and my friend Karen is working for a youth prison ministry called All Things Possible with Victor Marks. And she is able to get Victor to hire me on to work in the office and run the pen pal program. Mm-hmm. And basically what I did was I was the middleman for the letters that were coming through. People that would write letters to the students, I would send the letters to the students, and then students would write the letters back. I would edit them, improve them, and then send them back. Mm-hmm. So I loved that job. It was just amazing. I truly loved hearing these kids, their hearts, their struggles. I mean, just all these kids are locked up and they have nobody except for their pen pal. And so I was responsible for finding people to volunteer, to write to these kids. I had several pen pals myself. Dave had several pen pals. And so that was something that I did when I started. When we moved here, I started doing that. And then it was just a couple of months later. So we moved here in August, and by December, ATP could no longer afford to keep their doors open, so they had to shut down the Waco campus. Mm-hmm. Victor and Eileen Marks had moved to California, and they wanted all of everything to be there, headquartered out of California, and obviously I couldn't move to California. So I did work out of the home for several months, probably from January to August of 2009. Mm-hmm. I worked out of my home and they set me up with the office at the house, and I was able to continue the pen pal program. And Dave was working at the Methodist Children's Home. He was running an after school program for pretty much the projects here in Waco. And he'd go by the projects and pick up all the kids. And he started out the program with one kid, you know, and then by the end of it, he had, in fact, the Methodist home told him, you've got to slow down, because he was having anywhere from 80 to 100 kids coming every day after school to participate in whatever. Mm-hmm. And I would help him with that after I got off work. I would help him with the kids, and I would, you know, I did a cooking class. I was showing them how to cook easy foods that would be available in their home, you know, macaroni and cheese, hamburger helper, things mm-hmm. I knew that they could afford if they were, you know, their grandparents could afford to buy that stuff.
Right.
At least they could know how to cook it. So we partnered together and did that. And unfortunately, the Methodist home ran out of funds to do the after school program. And they offered Dave a job at the campus working for the Grandparents as Parents program, which is grandparents in the community who are raising their grandchildren. Mm-hmm. And that has probably been the best job he's ever had. He loves that job. And I always help him, you know, it seems like everywhere he goes, whatever he does, I'm always right behind him volunteering to help or do whatever, because I love that. I love to do that. I love to serve. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I don't care what it is. I will get out there and get my hands dirty. There's nothing too far out that I won't do.
Right.
So right now, back in August, we realized that our finances were just we just couldn't afford to even eat. And so I had to get a part-time job outside of the Pen Pal program. And so I did. I found a part-time job at a kids' resale shop here in Waco, and I love it. I love it. But I couldn't do both. I realized very quickly that I couldn't do the Pen Pal program and a part-time job because it was just too overwhelming for me. Mm-hmm. So I ended up telling Victor, listen, I might need to step down, which was an answer to a prayer for him because he didn't want to let me go, but he really needed everything to be in California. And mm-hmm. so it was just a real easy transfer, you know, just transferred everything over there. And, you know, now they're doing great. And I've just been working at Smarty Pants, which has opened up an amazing door for ministry opportunity there. And so mm-hmm. that's, yeah. I work for them. And, you know, we have, throughout the process, we lived over by the projects in Waco for almost, for a year. Mm-hmm. And it was getting really tough to live there because, you know, Chloe couldn't go outside and play. Her bikes were always getting stolen. There was gunshots every night. And, you know, I'm hardcore, but seriously, I was really ready to move. I was really hating Waco by that point. And right. we knew that the Lord had put us here for a reason. We didn't know what it was. It was just really difficult at that point in time. And we were driving back and forth to Waxahachie for church. We would drive an hour and 15 minutes every Sunday for church because we are like totally devoted to a church that is so outreach oriented. And so, I mean, we love Encounter Waxahachie. I mm-hmm. mean, that was really the church we'd always been looking for that we could never find. And so our heart was there. And through some friends at church there, we ended up being able to rent a home closer to the Robinson side of Waco. And this house is, you know, bigger than anything I've lived in 10 years. And so it's just an answer to prayer. The living room area it's amazing because it's big enough to hold a lot of people.
Right.
And when we came to look at the house, the first thing Dave said was, we can have a home church here. And I looked at him like, are you out of your mind? And I thought, what are you talking about? Well, the Lord had been dealing with him for over a year about starting a home church. And I didn't know it because he didn't say anything about it.
And just so people will know, y'all were involved leading one of the small groups for Encounter before yeah. moving to Waco. And even mm-hmm. after going to Waco, y'all were still involved in leading that. And not only on Sundays were you coming to Waxahachie for church, but Friday evenings, a lot of times you were driving up for a small group and leading that group as well.
Yes. Yes.
So
it was hard to leave that group. It really mm-hmm. was. That was our family. And, you know, when you have a small group at, you know, at somebody's house, we began to realize that people, their lives, they're ready to share their lives with somebody that they can trust. Mm-hmm. And these people were going through real issues and we were going through real issues and we bonded so quickly with all these people. And, I just remember the heartbreak I felt about having to not go there anymore because it was getting financially stressful on us to drive up Friday, go home, drive back up on Sunday. And so, mm-hmm. you know, it was really hard for me. I think I took it harder than anybody else. I mean, Dave was like, it's going to be okay. You know, it's going to be okay. But I was broken because this was my family. You know, these were right. people that I loved and trusted. And you know, growing up the way that I did, you don't really trust people very easily. And so, but these are people that knew me, they got me. Yeah. And so leaving that group was hard for me, but.
Well, and I remember some of the emails that we had back and forth. And I know Dave and I had emails back and forth as well about just how it is a hard thing to split. And I remember referring back to when our group kind of dissolved and we had to start a new group. And it's very hard when you've built those close relationships to start all over again.
But I
remember the one thing and I don't know if it helped or not, but I just said, don't think of it as leaving the group. Think of multiplying. And I think that's really what you have come to do there in Waco is you've multiplied tremendously. Starting a small group there, and then, as you mentioned, Dave walking in and saying, hey, I want to start a home church. So maybe tell a little bit about how that began and what was on your heart at that point.
Like I said, he felt the Lord impressing upon him about starting this home church. And he's always very careful to tell me what the Lord's talking to him about until he like has confirmation, which I think is very wise, actually. Because I'm the kind of person that's like, let's roll with it, you know? And so he kind of has to rein me in that way. So Brian, the pastor from Encounter Waxahachie, he said, you know, he started talking to Dave and he threw that idea out there to Dave without Dave even mentioning what the Lord had spoken to him about. So that was pretty much confirmation to him that that's something that the Lord wanted to happen. Mm-hmm. So he told me about it and I was like, all right, okay. I was a little nervous. I'm not going to lie. Every time my husband says, this is what the Lord wants us to do, there's a little freak out moment that I have. And, you know, as a wife, we crave stability. But at the same time, when you're completely relying on the Lord, you learn to go with the flow and trust that whatever happens, he's in control of it. Mm-hmm. So having gone to Colorado kind of taught us that. But I said, all right. I said, well, okay, when is this going to happen? Because, see, I'm the kind of person that has to have the particulars.
Right.
I need a plan. I need to know when, what time, what day, blah, blah, blah. And unfortunately, living in ministry, that doesn't ever happen. Mm-hmm. You're kind of just at the mercy of Christ. So anyway, he was like, well, I don't know when, and I don't know how, and I don't know how this is going to work out, but let's get in this house and see God move. And I was like, okay. So I started working at Smarty Pants, I guess, in August. And September, the end of September, we moved here into the house. And, or no, wait, it was the beginning of September we moved here at the house. Well, some of the girls at Smarty Pants, the place I work at, they're not churchgoers. They're not, I mean, I think they believe, but they don't do anything with their faith, or I don't know if there's a relationship there.
Right.
And so some of the girls started coming up to me, and I promise you, I don't remember ever saying a word about a home church. So they were like, hey, we hear you and your husband are going to start a home church at your home. And I was like, yeah, we are. Well, let us know when that starts because we're really interested. It sounds really cool what you guys are going to do. And I was like, where did y'all hear it? Well, I heard from this girl who heard from this girl. And I'm like, well, how did that girl hear about it? From you? And so I was just freaking out. I was like, all right, whatever. And so I told Dave, I said, listen, the girls at Smarty Pants are when we're going to start this home church thing. And I don't know what to tell them. I don't remember telling them anything about a home church, but a couple of them are pretty interested in coming. He was like, all right, well, let's get on the ball. Let's talk to Brian. Let's see when, you know. And so the whole thing was, is we have Encounter Waco, which is a plant from Encounter Waxahachie. And, mm-hmm. you know, we go through Brian for a council for, you know, if we've got issues, we need to talk it through to him. He's kind of our, what do you call it? He's, I don't know what the word is I'm looking for. He's the guy. He's
mentor,
the man.
Yeah.
There you go. Yeah. He's the dude. So Brian was like, oh man, this is awesome. This is perfect. Let's do it. You know? And so we started our home church October 4th was our first Sunday morning meeting. But I had a stipulation to this whole home church deal, okay? I was like, hey, cool. We could do home church here. But I love food. And food is like, it makes or breaks the deal for me, okay?
Right.
If you're going to have me over to your house, let's have some food. If you're going to have me over for Pampered Chef or Mary Kay, have some food, okay? Big girls love food. I'm all about the food. So I told David, listen, home church, great. We need to have lunch here, though, every time after we meet for everybody. Is mm-hmm. that is that doable? And he was like, absolutely doable. And quite honestly, I have to admit that when I'm talking about our church and I'm telling them about it meeting in the house, people are kind of like, okay. But then I mentioned, but hey, we have lunch afterwards and we feed everybody. They're like, oh, man, I'm in. Yeah. So there's something about food that brings people. And also you tell them that they can wear their pajamas. That pretty much gets them here as well.
Yeah, that seals the deal.
Yeah, it seals the deal. So, yeah, we opened up the house October 4th. I don't know how many people we had, probably 10, 15 people. ranging from all ages. You know, I think the oldest person we had here was Sis, who lives next door. She's 82 or 86. I can't remember. And so she visits us periodically. It's not an every Sunday thing for her, but you know what? It's awesome. Mm-hmm. And I just can't even tell you what's happened in the last 5 months. It's just been ridiculous. It's been ridiculous. So.
Well, and that's been exciting to watch from afar, from an hour and a half away or so, and to see those updates on Facebook and to hear what y'all are doing. Talk about some of the projects that y'all are doing for outreach as well.
Oh, my word. Yeah. The whole thing, the whole heart behind Encounter Waco is we want to get out to the community and really get our hands dirty. Mm-hmm. Any money that comes in here, it goes straight back out to the community. And we've designed it that way because we believe that that's what God wants the money for. I mean, we don't take a salary. We don't take any money out of the giving or offering or whatever comes in. We put it back out into the community. So we came up with several different little ministries that branch off of Encounter Waco. The first thing is Sheer Love. Sheer Love is a ministry that provides free haircuts to women, children, families that are underprivileged children, mm-hmm. and families, people that live out in the projects, or just anybody that we see that they're having a hard time. We just walk up to them and hand them a business card and say, here's a free haircut for whoever you need it for. Mm-hmm. And one of the girls that I work with at Smarty Pants, inside the store of Smarty Pants, there is a kids haircut place called Kids Cuts. Well, Erica Pack is the stylist there, and her and her husband have been coming to Encounter Waco since the day we opened. And she has come on board with Sheer Love. And just recently we had another stylist in Waco come on board with Sheer Love, just word of mouth, and she wants to be a part of it. We give them a monthly allotment, like $50, and that covers 5 haircuts for that month. Whatever comes in, you know, however much we can afford, we'll say, okay, well, we're going to give you this much. And they only charge us $10 a haircut. Mm-hmm. So, we've handed out, probably over 500 cards by now, because I've had to reorder and reorder and reorder. So we've spent a lot of money through that ministry, which is just incredible because we love to hand those cards out, and Erica loves to be a part of that. And, Shanna Sheffield is the new stylist that came on with us that does that. Okay, so that's Sheer Love. And
so
then we have
just to be sure, this isn't like a once a month thing. This is, you're just handing out a card, and then when they need the haircut, they can actually go and get the haircut. Excellent.
Absolutely. Yeah. Okay. We pay the stylist once a month as we get money.
Yeah.
But we hand out the cards, I mean, anytime. In fact, I give a stack of them to Chloe's teacher at school because she goes to a school where there's a bunch of underprivileged children. And so I asked her teacher, hey, do you think you could use these? And she's like, oh my gosh, this is excellent. I could do this for, you know, when we do games or prizes or to encourage them to do better on whatever. She says, I can, you know, student of the week, I can hand this out. This would be really great. So that's another lifeline that we kind of just pour out the cards towards her direction. So
excellent.
Yeah, it's an everyday thing. We hand them out to whatever.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So then after Sheer Love, we've got, of course, we're a big part of Laundry Love. Once a month we go to a different laundromat here in Waco. We try to hit the real poverty-stricken areas of Waco, because one thing I know about washing your clothes and living in an area like that is sometimes these people will just not wash their clothes for weeks and months at a time because they're just trying to buy groceries. So when they do go to the laundromat, they've got loads and loads and loads, and sometimes they don't have enough money, or sometimes they come, you know, we're not going to eat, we're not going to get no groceries this week, but we got to wash our clothes, kind of thing. So we've been going in once a month to the laundromats and just sack full of quarters. Like last month, I think we had $140 worth of quarters, and we would just walk up to people and just, you know, pay for their laundry.
Right.
And we'd also hand out the Sheer Love cards, you know, so that kind of ties in together. Another ministry that we do that's probably that's my baby right here is Porcelain Dolls. Porcelain Dolls is a strip club ministry. Basically, Jana Vanderberg and I got together a couple years ago. She had this idea. She called me up and she's like, listen, I got this idea for a really cool ministry. What do you think? So she started talking to me about this ministry. And I looked at her and I was like, are you crazy? I was like, I don't really know what you're talking about going into the strip clubs. I don't know that I could do that. And so basically the ministry is we make up little gift bags full of candy, lip gloss, eyeshadow, girly things that we could hand out to these dancers. Mm-hmm. We just go in, love them where they're at. We're not trying to preach to them. We're not trying to beat them over the head with the Bible. We just want to go in and tell them that we love them and mm-hmm. that they're loved. And so when she told me that, I was like, man, I don't know. I got to pray about that one because, you know, I've had some experience with that, with the sex industry before. My husband and I both have, and I just didn't know if I could go there.
Yeah.
I didn't know if my heart would be okay with that. I didn't know if my eyes would be okay with that. I just had a really rough time. So it never really panned out in the 2 years. We talked about it we'd talk about it periodically. We'd have conversations about it, but we never went anywhere with it until we moved here until David and I moved here to Waco. Mm-hmm. I started talking to this lady that David works with, who's actually his supervisor. And she, for some reason, Dave had mentioned to her about the strip club ministry. And at this point, we didn't have a name. We were just talking about it. So she pulls me into her office. This is the first time I've ever met her. And she was like, girl, you got to tell me about this strip club ministry. And I was like, well, we have never done anything, but this is the idea behind it. We just never felt like it was in God's timing because we had tried to go forward and it would just never move. So we knew that was the Lord telling us it wasn't time. So she was all on fire and she's like, we got to get this going. So I called Jana and I'm like, dude, you're not going to freaking believe this. I said, listen, get gas and come down here right now. And she's like, okay. So we all three met. It was Rion, me and Jana. And we started meeting, I guess, in August and September. And by September, we finally realized, okay, October needs to be the month. We need to go in October. We had no idea what we were doing. Mm-hmm. We didn't know if we should call the clubs first. We didn't know what to do. So this was totally a rogue mission. We were like, oh my gosh, okay. So we ended up making little gift bags full of candy. I don't know how many we made 25 because we were just going to go to there's three clubs here in Waco, mm-hmm. and we were just going to go to, I think, just two. And so we went to the first club, and by the way, that night we had everybody come over here. We probably had five or six girls come to help us out, to make mm-hmm. bags. We prayed, we ate, and then we went into the club. And the first club we went into, we were so nervous. We had no idea what we were going to do. We had no idea what we were going to say. We were shaking in our boots. We just had no idea how this was going to pan out. Because quite honestly, we thought we were going to get the door slammed in our face.
Yeah.
We expected that. We totally expected these people to say, are you kidding me? Get out of here. You're ridiculous. Mm-hmm. We walk into the first place and the owner, her name is Terry. She was there. She's like, hey, come on in. And we were like, what? Is she talking to us? Or so we kind of look behind us and look around us real nonchalantly like, she's talking to us. So we walk up to her and we introduce ourselves to her and we tell her, you know, well, we're with Porcelain Dolls and we just have some bags here for the girls. Do you think that'd be okay? We probably spent about 20 minutes in there talking to Terry. Uh-huh. And she would say something like, hey, how's this girl doing? Or how's this girl doing? She was asking us and we were like, I don't know who she's talking about. So anyway, apparently there's another, and we know them now, there's another strip club ministry here in Waco. And they thought we were with them. And we were like, oh, no, we're a different group. We had no idea there was another group here.
Yeah.
And so anyway, but there's enough love to go around, so it's all good. Mm-hmm. So we talked to her, and we started talking about Thanksgiving was the next month. And I shot my mouth off before I got a chance to talk to Jana or anything. I just turned around and looked over at Terry. And I'm like, hey, what if we do a Thanksgiving dinner next month here for the girls here at the club? And I looked over at Jana at first and I was like, uh-oh, I should have probably asked her that first. And Jana was like, yeah, we can do that. We can totally do that. And Terry was like, oh, man, that'd be great. The girls would totally love that. So we were like, all right. I was just so excited. I was shaking. I was like, oh my gosh, I can't believe I just said that. What did I commit us to? I was just so excited that we were even in.
Right.
So you know, I was freaking out. So we walk out of the club and Jana looks over at me and I'm like, I'm so sorry. She goes, no, that's perfect. That's perfect. This is going to work out so perfect. So we gave all of our bags away. I think we only had 20 bags made because we didn't know what to expect.
Yeah.
And I was like, Jana, we don't have any more bags. She's like, we got to go back to your house and make more before we go to the next club. So we had to come back and make bags. And we went back to the second club. They let us right in. And they were like, you can go out and talk to the girls out on the floor, whatever you want to do. We were like, okay. So we walked in. We handed out the bags. The girls were very responsive. I mean, they were like, oh, thank you so much. And just really, really excited to see us. Genuinely right. excited to see us. And this was just not what we were expecting at all. So we go home and we are just blown away, blown smooth away. We cannot believe how awesome this was. So we plan for the next month. You know, we plan the Thanksgiving dinner and we go and we serve Thanksgiving dinner. And I mean, it was just amazing. And then that was in November. Well, the club, as we were walking out, they were like, here, we got something for you. And we looked at each other, me and Jana looked at each other, and we're like, okay. She handed us a check. And we kind of looked at her like, what is this for? You know, she's like, just take that. You could use it for your ministry. The owner of the strip club gave us a check.
Right.
And when we got into the car, I looked over at Jana, and I just started crying because I could not believe what was going on. Mm-hmm. I just thought, how does this happen? How does this happen? How does this person think it's okay? You know, I mean, so I was just freaking out. I was like, man, this is just amazing.
Right.
So every month we've gone in, we've had just an awesome response. We've also had some trials and tribulations. Unfortunately, you know, we thought that we were going to have trials and tribulations with the girls and the clubs. Unfortunately, it's another ministry that we're having issues with or had issues with. It's cleared up now, but I mean, just, it was ridiculous. It was ridiculous. It was really discouraging to have to go through a lot of what we had to go through last month.
Mm-hmm.
And we ended up frequenting the third club and meeting some girls there. And the first time we went in there, we went to the back dressing room and there was this dancer getting dressed and she was pregnant. I mean, like big pregnant.
Yeah.
I looked at Jana and Jana looked at me and I was like, oh my word. So I walk up to her and I hand her a bag and I'm like, hey, here, this is for you. And she was like, oh, okay. Okay. She didn't really, and a lot of times they won't make eye contact. They're kind of awkward feeling and
yeah,
they don't know what you're about to say or do or whatever. And so we just kind of back off, hand them a bag and just really, you know, not really say anything. Well, the manager at the time of that club, his name is Tim. He was so happy we were there. He was like, man, the girls really love for you guys to come in and hand them out things. And so y'all can come back anytime you want to. We've got several pregnant dancers. And, you know, if you want to throw a baby shower, that would be great. And I looked over at Jana. I'm like, ooh, baby shower, baby shower. So we leave. We end that outreach. And my boss that I work for at Smarty Pants, she is starting to really get all over this outreach. Like she hears me talking about porcelain dolls. She starts hearing about the things that we do. And she overheard me talking about the pregnant dancer.
Mm-hmm.
So she gets a consignment in from a lady that walks in and says she's got a car seat stroller combo. And she says, listen, I don't want to sell this. I don't want to make any money. Most of all, I don't want you to make any money. I want you to donate this to somebody who needs it.
Mm.
Please do not try to make profit off of this. So my boss, Leslie, immediately thinks of porcelain dolls and the girl that we saw that was pregnant, who is her name is Stephanie.
Mm-hmm.
So she calls me into the back and she's like, Carrie, I got something for you and I want you to take this to your dancer. And I was like, okay. It was brand new. It was a car seat and stroller combo. And I was just blown away. I was like, man, this is amazing. Because this girl has nothing.
Yeah.
So the next month we go in January and Jana and I walk up to the front to, because we always have to say hi to the door people or the managers to make sure that they know it's cool that we're there. We can go in.
Mm-hmm.
So I walk up to the front and I'm like, hey, I've got a stroller here for one of the dancers. Is she working tonight? And they were like, yeah, she's here. Go ahead and go to the back with the stroller and I'll tell her to go back there when y'all are set up or whatever. So we go to the back, we go get the stroller, we go to the back, and she walks in, and she just looks at us and looks at the stroller, and we're like, this is for you. We wanted to give this to you because we know that you're going to need it. Mm-hmm. She came undone, and she was just like, you don't understand. And I was like, I don't understand, but I bet you I could. Mm-hmm. And so we just began to talk to her. And before we knew it, Jan and I turned around. There were like 10 girls crowded around us, and two more of them were pregnant. And so I look at Jana and I said, you know, I'm thinking we're going to have a baby shower next month. And so the three girls, you know, Stephanie, Emily, and Didi, they were like, that would be so awesome because I don't have anything and I don't have any family and blah, blah, blah. They were just going on and on and on. So we prepare a baby shower for the next month, February. Mm-hmm. And we were going to have it at the club early in the day. But then the girls contacted Jana and said, listen, I want to invite my friends and family. So do you think maybe we could have it somewhere else? And I told Jana, I said, hey, let's do it at my house. Mm-hmm. So we have this huge baby shower. I start telling my boss, you know, listen, I need to start collecting clothes. I'll pay you whatever you want. She's like, no, we're going to donate clothes. These girls had so many clothes for each one of their kids. It was ridiculous. This kid's going to be outfitted for a year. Awesome. I mean, there was just boxes and bags and not only clothes, but I mean, people came. I don't know. We probably had 20 people here at my house, you know, 20 people for this baby shower for these three strippers. And it was phenomenal. It was phenomenal. And the coolest thing I think out of all of that is that Stephanie, the one we gave the stroller to, she said, I want to come to church here. And I was like, well, you're more than welcome to come. Mm-hmm. We meet here Sunday morning at 11. Come on. She has not missed a Sunday since.
Wow.
She's been here every Sunday. She's been here Thursday night for Bible study because we kind of do a girls' Bible study, just a real laid back. Let's talk about our life. Let's vent and let's apply scripture to it.
Yeah.
And she's here every Thursday. She's here every Sunday. She did Laundry Love with us last month. She went up there like a pro. Like she knew what she was doing. Just went up. And the coolest thing about having Stephanie around is the fact that, okay, she did stop dancing. And she doesn't want to go back to dancing after she has the baby. Mm-hmm. But I think she struggles more with, it's a quick dollar and I know that I could get it fast. And, you know, how am I going to take care of my son? Because the dad is not in the picture.
Yeah.
And so Jana and I have really been trying to encourage her to a different path. And through the Methodist Children's Home, there is a lady that works there that works with David. That is her job, is to help these women who have no resources, to help them find a job and to help give them the resources they need to get their lives on track.
Right.
And she's also a volunteer with Porcelain Dolls, which I think is score on our part because we've got some really great connections to get these girls into a place they want to be.
Yeah.
So Stephanie is, she's amazing. She even wants to go in the clubs with us now. She wants to go in on the outreaches and talk to the girls and say, hey, I was a stripper. You know, this can happen. You can have a better life. You know, mm-hmm. you can have a relationship with God. And I think what really, really just gets me is the fact that this girl, I have seen her transform in the last almost 2 months. I've seen her transform to this person that was real, you know, sharp and just, I don't know the word. She was just really kind of in your face. And
yeah.
This is who I am. You're going to like me. If you don't like me, then I don't care. To a real soft, loving person. And she's still got personality. Mm-hmm. You know, I got personality, but she is more loving. And I can see that the Lord is really working in her heart and her life. And she's not afraid to go up and tell people, yeah, they used to come and give me a bag. I was a stripper, you know, hey, yeah, I'm a, you know, whatever. And we didn't know we could say that kind of stuff because we didn't want to make her feel awkward or anything.
Yeah.
Or embarrass her. But at Laundry Love, when we were there, we were talking to one of the women because she was asking about the strip club ministry. I don't know. I guess somebody else with our group had said something about it. And Stephanie was like, yeah, they gave me a bag. I mean, I used to be a stripper and, you know, now I'm here with them and whatever. And I was like, okay, game on. I can talk about it. I can tell people we've got a stripper who comes to our church. She's like, when we were in the car, she's like, anytime you want to talk about it, anytime you want me to talk about it, I don't have a problem with that.
Yeah.
She's like, you guys just don't understand what you've done. This is my favorite church ever. You know, she just goes on and on about just the people here at the church and the life, the relationship,
yeah.
You know? So that's just been the most awesome ministry that we have that branches out of Waco.
Yeah. Well, and what's interesting to me, and we were talking about this, some of the guys were talking about this last week at Whataburger. You and Dave originally found Encounter through an advertisement that was at the theater.
Yeah.
And you saw the stickers around town and so forth, and so you decided to check it out. And yet you've taken a different approach to reaching people like Stephanie, in that yeah. It's real lifestyle, love-oriented, and it's showing grace to them. And not that one side is necessarily better than the other. I mean, personally, I'm going to favor the second one. But,
yeah. You
know, there's nothing wrong with the advertising, but it's the genuine love and authenticity that you've showed Stephanie and shown the other girls that has helped transform them and help them to really see God working in their lives. So I think that's amazing, almost kind of a full circle type of approach.
It really is. And I think with our group, we've got people here that attended one Sunday proclaiming, we're atheists, we don't believe in God, we don't believe in anything, you know, so we just want to let you know ahead of time. Mm-hmm. And I was like, okay, well, whatever. That doesn't bother me.
Yeah.
But yet they continue to come, and now they're reading scripture, and now they believe in God. So I think it's more of a, that these kind of people come to our house thinking that we're going to try to change them. And once they get here, they realize, oh, I can be myself, and they end up finding their own relationship with Christ.
Right.
And they realize that we're not going to try to challenge their views, or we're not going to try to force our views on them. They know what to expect when they walk in the door, you know, and I think more than anything that type of ministry is the most amazing, because it gives people that are in a position where they think that they can't be a part of God, or they can't have a relationship with God, it gives them hope that they can.
Mm-hmm.
When they hear about me and Dave and our life, and they hear about Stephanie, who's a stripper, or they see two drug addicts that are sitting in our living room that are, you know, yeah, they're still drug addicts, but guess what? They're coming to church.
Yeah.
I mean, come on. You know, things like that. I keep telling, I have this person that I know that challenges me all the time about, well, I cannot believe you're going into strip clubs, and I cannot believe you're doing this. They're just using you. And my response is, well, let them. Mm-hmm. If they want to use me, let them use me, because eventually they're going to see that what I have is genuine, and I don't care if they use me, because someone that's going to speak to them, and they're going to understand the love of Christ and mercy and grace and the power of the cross. Let them use me, because guess who else is using me?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that kind of stuff. It's irritating to come up against other Christians that are real, I think Brian said it best yesterday in an email he sent me, saying that they're going to crucify you. Yes, they do. They burn at the stake, but I don't care.
Yeah.
You could light that match all you want to, because I know what I'm doing is what God wants me to do. And he's being able to use me in a way that, you know, I would have never come up with this myself.
Yeah.
And I certainly would not have ever, I would have never done it without him.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's a dangerous place to go.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, our group is so diverse here at Encounter Waco. But at the same time, people come and they are so refreshed. They can feel the presence of the Lord. And it knocks off a little bit of their roughness every time they walk in. They got the chip on the shoulder, you know, the attitude. But by the time they're sitting down for lunch, they're all right.
Yeah, and you know, I love the picture. Greg Ressinger talks about the table being the great equalizer. And mm-hmm. I think that's what you're discovering as well. You know, the Thanksgiving meal that you prepared for the strip club, that was a great equalizer. You all sat down, and you may not have all sat down at the exact same time, but everybody was equal around the table. And you're doing that on Sundays as well.
Yeah.
Whether you're a former stripper, a drug addict, whether you're an atheist, we can all sit down and enjoy a meal. And it equalizes. Yeah. Nobody's better than anybody else. We're all
that's
broken,
right.
And we all need God.
Yeah, so. That's absolutely right. we've had people also ask us about, well, how many people do you have go to your church? You know, well, it varies every Sunday. We could have yeah. 8 people. We could have 15. We could have 20. Yeah. It just depends, you know. But there's a lot of people who are numbers oriented. And I'm sorry, I'm just not. That's just not who I am. My husband's not that way. We want relationship versus mm-hmm. numbers.
Right.
Okay. If there's 2 people that come on Sunday, then there's 2 people. There's more food for us. But we're more about, it doesn't matter how many people are here. What matters is what they get when they get here.
Yeah, good. Well, I know there's probably lots of other stories we could tell, but time is running short, and I want to be sure to let people know how they can find out more about Encounter Waco if they'd like to get involved, if they're in the area, or Porcelain Dolls or Laundry Love. I know that you can probably get all that from your Facebook page. Is that correct?
Yes.
Is there another way that people can reach you, find out more about you?
Absolutely. Porcelain Dolls has a MySpace, and okay. it's MySpace.com/porcelaindolls
okay.
_2009.
Okay.
And then, of course, we have a Facebook fan page, and anybody can send me an email if they want to, if they're interested. My email is DAKAMC3 mm-hmm. @yahoo.com.
Okay.
It couldn't be easy. It has to be difficult.
No, that's fine. That's fine. Well, and we'll have links to all that on the podcast page. So if you're listening and you didn't catch any of that, we'll have a link to that. Any final words or any final thoughts before we wrap up?
Basically, I'm just going to ask for prayer. I mean, okay. you know, we've got a lot going on. These different ministries, we're trying to reach out to the community and to touch people in a way that they know that they could come to Christ at any point in their life. They don't have to clean up first or whatever. So I just want to ask for prayer because it is time consuming, obviously. But more than that, I know that prayer works. And I know that anything can be accomplished through prayer. So we just ask for prayer.
Okay. Well, good. Well, Carrie, we do appreciate all that you're doing, all that Dave is doing. And we enjoy getting those updates on Facebook and email and so forth. And so it's great to hear those. And I know that a lot of people will probably want to keep in touch, so we'll be sure to pass those things along. And we appreciate all that you're doing, and we'll continue to pray for you and your ministry.
Thank you. We appreciate it.
Thanks for joining us on another episode of the Something Beautiful podcast. It's been Carrie McCam. We'll have links to her Facebook page about Encounter Waco as well as Porcelain Dolls and so forth on our website, somethingbeautifulpodcast.com.
Sprawl between the empires of our good Lord and the liar, we stand. Please stand with me. 'Cause right now I faith to take it. You know when we come to break it. Pray. between the impacts of our good Lord and the liar. Will you stand? Please stand with me. And we'll stand and pray. Push the dark.
If you have any questions or comments about this show, we do encourage you to drop us a line. You can email us somethingbeautifulpodcast@gmail.com or call our listener line 972-535-8980, 972-535-8980, or anywhere in the world if you're on Skype, simply Skype JD Blundell, and you can find a link to that right on our podcast page at www.somethingbeautifulpodcast.com.
Thanks for listening to the Something Beautiful podcast. Join us again next week at somethingbeautifulpodcast.com.